what happens is in a partner relationship, one partner tries to use it as a weapon against the other. And when money becomes a weapon, I don't want to say your relationship's doomed, but it's not likely to end well.
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And perhaps the most important conversation, one-to-self. I'm your host, George Torok. My guest today is Robert Geniak. Here's three facts that I think you should know about Robert. One, he is the author of the Canadian bestseller, Rich is a State of Mind. There it is. That's the book. With over 45,000 copies sold. That's 45,000. Two, he is passionate about helping people think differently about their personal finances. And I think the key word there is actually think. And three, he's a frugal guy. He drives a 2010 Dodge Journey with currently 374,900 kilometers on the odometer. 374,000 kilometers. That's a lot. So clearly he's not changing cars every year. Robert Geniak, welcome to Your Intended Message.
Thank you very much, George. It's great to be here with you today.
Robert, delighted to talk with you. Many years ago, I remember when you appeared on my radio show, Business in Motion. It's good to sit down here with you for our discussion today, which is conversations about money within family.
It's an interesting area, George, because it's something very few people want to talk about, because money is an emotional issue for so many people. And it's easier to talk about sex, talk about politics, talk about religion, than it is to actually talk about money. Yet some of the fundamental discussions we ever have with our children, with our partners, or with our parents all seem to center around it, yet nobody wants to talk about it.
That's true. And I find it ironic that those other topics, politics, religions, and sex, those are extremely emotional. And yet money, by its nature, should not be emotional. Yet it seems to be emotional when it comes to family discussions. Why do you think that is?
I think, George, because in the families we were raised is where we get our foundational education about money. We learn it at home. The school systems across North America do a horrible job at teaching kids anything about money. So what we learn in the home, which is great if our parents had a good foundational education in money. If our parents did good things with money, odds are pretty good we're going to as well. But if our parents didn't do good things with money or didn't have that foundation for doing better things, it's hard to impart that to your children. And then the kids don't grow up with the proper messages or with the advantages of understanding that money is just a medium of exchange. There's nothing to be emotional about with it. Yet for so many of us, and it's not just with kids and parents, it's with our own parents as well. Money remains an emotional issue in 2021.
Now, let's look at the parent to child thing. And I think about my upbringing. My dad raised us. And I think the one thing I learned about him was, well, don't spend all your money.
It's a good lesson, George.
Spend less than you have.
Yeah. When parents are talking to children about money, the intended message generally is very basic. Don't spend more money than you have. Put some away for a rainy day. That seems to be the fundamental and it's a good one. Now, you and I are of the same age demographic. So when old we grew guys. Up, old guys, when we grew up, we probably had the traditional piggy bank, right? Or sometimes it was an old coffee can or whatever it was. And we would take change, pennies, nickels, dimes, quarters, and we would put them in the bank. We would put them away. That fundamental lesson today is really, really hard to give to children because there is no change, right? We don't carry cash and we don't carry a pocket full of coins the way we did 35, 40, 50 years ago. Everything's done tap, tap, tap with the little green card or the blue card or the red card. And it's what I tend to call frictionless spending. You don't have to hand money over. You don't get any change back. You just tap and go. And when you do that, it's like you're not spending money at all. So when parents are trying to impart this to children, it can be a difficult concept. And we need to get them to understand, where does money come from, right? How did we get money? And if you ask children, and I occasionally get to do this in speaking seminars where young people are there, and I ask them, where does money come from? And they always tell me the same thing. It comes from the machine in the wall at the bank. You know, you put a card in and money comes out. Well, yes, that is where it comes from at the bank, but where does it come from? I.e. working for money and having a job and earning money, and the issue that the government wants some of your money. So taxes and all of these things come into the issue of where does money come from? How do we teach those lessons to children? Because that intended message that we give to them is something they will carry through for pretty much the rest of their life. Once we get that ingrained, it's hard to rewire later on. So it's very important as parents that we give the proper message to our children so that they're comfortable with money. And I think that's where the emotion comes from, George. Sometimes we're just uncomfortable talking about it. If our kids see us uncomfortable talking about it, they go, oh, there must be something here. This must be something mysterious I'm not supposed to know anything about.
And I'm wondering why, I'm still wondering why that is, Robert. And if the concept that a parent should convey to a child is, hey, you got to work for money. You get a job or you run a business, or maybe you have enough and you actually invest, but it starts out with you working. And why is working such a dirty topic?
I'm not so sure that the concept of work is, but using money as exchange for labor, even within the family dynamic, right? Kids often have chores. They have to clean their room. They have to make their bed. They have to do the dishes. They have to cut the lawn. And often they're given an allowance in exchange for that work, which sets up the dynamic that, you know, we all get to as we get older. You know, we go to school, we graduate, we go out into the working world, and we offer up our services to an employer who in turn gives us money for what we're doing. And that can be a great lesson to learn early, because, so, you know, there, and we have all these concepts, you know, money doesn't grow on trees. You know, no, I'd love to find a money tree. I haven't seen one. If I ever see one, I will probably take a few bills off it and tuck them in my pocket. But these messages that we impart to our kids are critically important because they will carry them around for a long, long time.
And if you were able to have the perfect conversation between a parent and child, what would be the 1, 2, 3 key lessons that that parent should convey to that child?
I would want them to convey that money is important. It has value. You need to take care of it and not spend it frivolously. But you also need to give some away, so that the concept of charity in giving needs to be ingrained early. And there are all kinds of books out there that talk to children about money, and that, you know, as a child gets money, some of it should be spent. You know, you earned it, you get to spend it on whatever kids spend it on. you put some away, so you save, and then a certain portion of it can be allocated to giving back. And I think those are valuable lessons that we carry forward, ingrained in childhood with the intended message from the parents, and then we carry them forward to, into adulthood for our own selves.
Did you receive positive, constructive lessons from your parents on money?
The basic lesson from my mom and dad was spend less money than you earn, put some away for a rainy day. Not that money was a bad thing. And I guess I grew up in a decidedly middle class neighborhood in a small town outside of Windsor, Ontario. My dad worked in an auto factory. My mom had part-time jobs all the time. So, you know, money wasn't an issue. We were never worried about whether or not we were going to be able to eat next week. But it was never in such abundance that we were able to, that my parents were able to do everything they ever wanted to do. You know, so my lesson from watching them as a kid is you've got to take good care of this stuff because it's important. And I think they did a good job in imparting those lessons to me. And I think that was their intended message to me that now I try to share with others.
Now let's move to the a next stage in life where it's okay. The money discussion between partners.
Oh, that's fun stuff.
Especially if they come from different backgrounds or upbringing.
The current statistics, and you know, as a speaker yourself, George, you're aware that 73% of all statistics are made up on the spot. The current statistics say that somewhere between 50 and 70% of all marital or relationship breakdowns happen because of differences in issues surrounding money. It's a pretty big number. And yeah, is that number too high? Sure. But what if it's only 50? What if it's 40? What if it's 38? At the end of the day, issues around money, the conversations around money, styles and how we manage money, how we feel about it, have a huge impact on our primary relationship with our partner. In part due to sometimes the key factor is opposites attract, right? So you have a spender attracted to a saver. And in those situations, the conversations get very, very difficult because, you know, you have a small difference of opinion is manageable, but big expectations around emotional issues about money then tend to blow up relationships.
And if you were advising partners on that conversation, how to keep it civil, how to keep it productive, what advice have you given, would you give?
The advice I would give, and it is of no help to anybody in the middle of one of these arguments. The advice I give is to people in the early days of their relationships, is have the money discussion and talk early. Not first date early, but early. You know, before you get down that path of planning a future and talking about, you know, whether or not we should buy a condo or a house, whether or not we want to travel more, whether our lives are going to be about stuff or about experiences. Those conversations, George, are critical to setting the foundation for a good, healthy relationship. Because when money becomes an issue, what happens is in a partner relationship, one partner tries to use it as a weapon against the other. And when money becomes a weapon, I don't want to say your relationship's doomed, but it's not likely to end well.
Money sounds powerful. We can now weaponize money. and so that's interesting. So early in a relationship, on those, and perhaps they should add these to those dating apps, you know, some questions to ask are, do you prefer stuff or experiences, condo or house,
rent? How much student debt do you have? How much credit card debt are you carrying? You know, what, you know, a comment about what was your earliest experience or memory about money? Because if a child were to grow up in a home where money conversations were difficult and money was extremely limited, their view on money and relationships is going to be radically different than someone who didn't. And it's not to say that these partners can't exist in a relationship, even with different styles and different attitudes. You know, we don't all have to be the same about everything, but money is a key one that you kind of have to be on the same page. You don't need to be in the same line, but you need to be somewhere on that same page in order to, you know, make it work for you with your partner.
Robert, where have you seen or have you heard where if you got partners with opposite views on some aspect of money the difference was insurmountable. They just couldn't overcome. What is a typical, if you're here and I'm there, it's just, we're not going to work out.
If a partner relationship gets to that point, George, I don't want to say it's doomed. I'd hate to say any relationship is doomed, but it's probably not going to work from that perspective, just because it becomes a wedge in the relationship and many couples can't overcome it at all. You know, we've seen this with, you even see this with friendships, let alone partnerships. If you've got a circle of friends and there's always one friend in the group who's always a few bucks short, yet the group always wants to go out and grab a burger and a beer, you know, back in the days when you could do that. And, you know, that one person in the circle is always like, oh God, they want to go out again, or they want to go here. It's like, I don't have the money to afford to be able to do that. Yet they will rarely open up to the group, even though they're tight friends, right? They've been friends since university days, maybe 20, 30 years. Goes back to the emotion, the things we learned in childhood. We don't talk about money, that even if I'm having an issue, and this is where in partner relationships, money issues get swept under the rug. And sometimes a partner, if they're at odds with their partner, they go and buy something. And what do they do with it? They hide it, right? They put it in the closet. They don't want their partner to know. They take the price tag off so that if it does get found, it's like, no, I've had that for a long time. You know, you've just never seen me wear it, or you've never seen me use it. And that has to be a horrible situation to be in a partner relationship.
What Ferrari in the garage? What are you talking about? Robert, what might be an early in a relationship? What might be a good non-threatening question to ask a potential partner to get some feel about where they stand on money?
I think asking a potential partner, what is your earliest memory of money, and what is the biggest lesson your parents taught you? Because if they say, my parents taught me absolutely nothing about money and we never talked about it as a family, I can assure you they're never going to talk to you about it either, right? It's just what they know. And we tend to perpetuate that. Doesn't mean we can't learn new stuff. Doesn't mean we can't develop new and better behaviors, you know, but the messages we convey about the emotion around money, they start early and we carry them for a long time.
Now, Robert, let's move on to another type of family money discussion. And I don't know which one of these would be the most difficult one, but this is one certainly that I'm not looking forward to, and it's child to elderly parent.
I am already there, George. My father is going to be 81 years old this year, and I help him with a lot of his personal financial stuff. Is an only child. It's kind of my job, but I found out. And this is something I think is great for children of our age to talk to our parents about. I found out when my mother passed away in 2017 that my father knew absolutely nothing about money. He didn't know about the bank accounts. He didn't know how much money they had in the bank as a couple, because money and managing all of that was my mom's thing. And then mom passed away. And now it has to become dad's thing, right? And I've spent a lot of time trying to help educate him and have enjoyed the process, although I found it frustrating at times, because we want to take care of them. We want to help them and guide them. You know, they did it for us when we were kids. Now we get to do it for them as the child to the older parent. But there's something I've kind of learned through this process is that your parents don't want to take financial advice from you. Why? Because, you know, they diapered and powdered your butt when you were 6 months old, and now you're trying to give them advice and going, Dad, you really need to handle this better. And here's what you need to look out for. And here's what you need to think about. And it's all that's really nice, but I got this. Right. So they do need our help. And the area that I encourage all of the listeners and viewers of Your Intended Message to talk to your parents about is talk about the scams that are out there targeting your parents. The phone scam, the CRA scam, the calling from Visa credit card services, there's been activity on your account. Why? I don't want to say that our parents are more trusting than we are at our age. We've hit that 60 and cynical thing, but our parents aren't there. So if somebody calls and I'm calling from Canadian Revenue Agency and you have a tax problem, and if you don't pay this by Thursday afternoon, it's like, oh my God, right? You know, what do we do? It's like, yeah, right, click, we hang up the phone. But getting an elderly parent to do that can be more of a challenge. So it's critical. And while that's not a quote unquote money issue, it really kind of is, because if these scammers take $5,000 from a parent, well, what happens is once they do it once, they're going to come back and try it again, you know, with a different scam. It's like, oh, you need to have your entire roof repaired, but we need $5,000 down in order to do that. They're gone. They don't come back. So, you know, I think it's very, very important, George, that our messages to our parents are about safety. I'm not doing this because I want your stuff. I'm not doing this because I want your money. I'm doing this because I want to keep you safe in the same way that you created a safe and stable environment for me when I was a kid. Now it's my turn to repay and do that for our parents. I really do think it's critical, George.
Now, I find that insightful, what you just said there, Robert, that maybe the approach is, because I can't imagine if I were to approach my dad and say, Dad, I'm going to give you advice on your money. and he, you know, he has his own investments as well. So he's got some savvy. But I like the idea of, well, you know, you helped me, you gave me advice, and now let me, maybe I can offer you some advice because I'm concerned about you being safe.
Yeah. And it really is a safety issue, particularly when it comes to the multitude of scammers and scam opportunities that are out there. I just read about a new one on the weekend that has to do with a telephone scam for energy services. What are we all concerned about? How much energy we use, how much natural gas, how much electricity. And so now, you know, before it was CRA and Visa credit card services. And now, you know, not surprisingly, as we head to the end of summer and we, you know, our parents start thinking about winter and how much is it going to cost to heat the house? Well, we'd like to come in and do an energy audit for you. Well, you know what happens the moment you give them access to your house, you've got a problem, right? And they're good. And trust me, they're good at it. The scam people, you know, making it sound like, you know, we're doing you a favor, Mr. Geniac, and we're, you know, we'd like to help you save more money. And what do our parents hear? Save more money. Well, that's great. You know, if I don't have to spend money, this is a good thing. You know, my kids have always been telling me, you've got to be careful about how much money you're spending. You know, you're on that fixed income. And so it appeals to them, but it really shouldn't appeal to them. And we have to act as the intermediary and protect them.
What emotions do you think are at play in that type of, scam?
I think there's an emotion around security, and with seniors, many who are on a fixed income, money's an issue. And if they could save 20, 30, 50, 70 bucks a month, and somebody says, I can save you, you know, $500 a year. It's like, wow, I could take that money and spend it on my grandkids. I could make an extra trip to go and see them. So I think a lot of that appeal comes from that, George. And so that, you know, the messages that are moving around about money from the scammer, they have an intended message. I can save you money. You can do better things with your money because I saved you some. Our intended message to our parent has to be about safety. These people are not here to help you. You know, that doesn't mean you should develop a general distrust of society. You just have to be very careful. And that old adage, if it sounds too good to be true, it's not true, certainly applies here.
Robert, your book, bestseller, 45,000 copies, Rich is a State of Mind. Who's this for and what would they get out of it?
I think the intended audience for the book, George, are people probably from the age of 25 to 50, might be kind of the sweet spot for the book. Certainly, I've had high school and university students read it and commented on it. I've had boomer parents buy it for their kids, which is great. And for me, financial advisors love using the book because it's the story of a Canadian family, a basic, hardworking Canadian family trying to come to grips with everything related to personal finance, which is money and investing and setting goals and insurance and unfortunately wills and estates. And it covers all of the basics that we need to know. You know, it's not intended to be everything you ever wanted to know about money in one book. The book would be that thick, right? And then nobody would read it. But it is a novel about that Canadian family. And I set it up that way so that readers could identify with the characters and go, that's exactly how I feel. Or that was my sister when I was a kid. She had that exact same comment about money. And if I can get people to identify with the characters, I can get them to read the message.
For people who want to get hold of that book, it's available at the website richisastateofmind.com/order. You'll find the link in the description below. That's richisastateofmind.com. Robert, in wrapping up, if you could give advice to people out there who might be in a position where, let's say they're in that middle age group right now, where they have children, they have young children, they have a partner, and they have elderly parents. They have three conversations, very different, that they need to have. If you could give them advice so that they could persevere and not bang their head against the wall or put it through the wall and still have productive conversations with these people in their life?
Well, certainly I don't want to see anybody putting their head through the wall about money. That would not be productive and painful. But I think that is somebody in that position, the sandwich generation, right? We're trying to deal with both ends of the spectrum plus our own stuff. The intended message I would like to leave them is money's not emotional. It's just a medium of exchange, and don't be afraid to talk to it, because it's the things that we're afraid to talk about to our kids, that we're afraid to talk about to our partners, and that we're afraid to talk about to our parents that eventually will come around and bite us on the butt if we don't. So that doesn't mean you have to have a perfect conversation. You don't need to plan this out in such a way, I'm going to say this, I'm going to say this, I'm going to say this. Because the more you try to make the conversation perfect, the less likely you are to ever have it. So start simple, basic questions, have the conversation about money, and take the emotion out of it. And when we do that, it gets a lot easier, George.
My guest today is Robert Geniak, reminding you that money is not an emotion and it's not a weapon.
If you like what you heard, remember to like, comment, and share this podcast. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.